Jenna Ellis, and this is the AFR exclusive podcast where we get to do a deep dive into issues that you care about, questions you're concerned with, and guests you love to hear from. And so this week, as we previewed on my morning show, Jenna Ellis in the Morning this week, we're going to have Paul Teller, who is the vice president at Advancing American Freedom, on the show. And we kind of gave you a preview of some of the policy considerations of how to actually roll back the deep state, the administrative state. And this is a concern that I know so many of you have. And we actually have gotten a lot of response from listeners from our AFR family wanting to know more details on exactly how President Trump and the whole administration can basically return government power back to we the people. That was a promise even in his first term. And now I think going into the 47 agenda and the America First agenda, there is a new revival and there is new optimism, but also just a new precision strategy to actually accomplish this. There is also on Advancing American Freedom's website, advancingamericanfreedom.com, what's called the Freedom Agenda. And this has three buckets that, again, we previewed for you: American culture, American opportunity, and American leadership. So we want to talk about all three of these today with my very special guest, Paul Teller. And for those of you who have known Paul for a long time, you'll know that he has been in the policy world for 30 plus years. He was a former member of Trump's first term for all 4 years as a White House administration personnel there under Trump, and so has a wide breadth and depth of experience. And so, Paul, thanks so much for joining me for this deep dive. And kind of give us an overview of, you know, where we're at and where we're headed in this next term.
I appreciate it. Great to be with you. I appreciate you having me on the radio earlier this week. And yeah, as you said, great to do this deeper dive. Yeah, I mean, I think what's so exciting, and I'm sure we'll talk about this now and many other times, we're finally at a point where Republicans, where conservatives are doing what they said they would do, right? Think about how many years we've heard, you know, folks on the right say, we got to cut the size and scope of government, you know, we got to cut regulation and cut spending, and they would do literally the opposite and really even have no intention to do anything except the opposite. You know, they would, like, use that as a campaign slogan, as a direct mail piece, an email blast, get into office and say, oh, the time is not right, or we don't have 60 votes in the Senate, we can't do this, can't do that. Excuses are done, right? Elon Musk, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, et cetera, they're just done with excuses, and they're just going in and saying, no, we made promises to the American people to cut government, and not just for fun, not just for the sake of cutting government, but for the purpose of getting government out of your lives as much as possible, letting the average person, individual, organization, business, the whole thing, make more of his or her own choices with his or her own resources. And so it's just an exciting time. You can hear my voice, right? It's an exciting time because we are finally seeing kind of, if you will, government on the run and the private sector in the driver's seat. It's really great.
Yeah, it's incredibly awesome. And I think one of the biggest things already that we're focusing on is this outrageous and wasteful spending that DOGE is continuing to uncover. And of course, there have been a myriad of lawsuits that have already been filed saying from the left, oh no, Trump can't possibly cut off USAID funding. He can't possibly tell these NGOs that they can't get tax dollars to go and support illegal immigrants. And oh no, the executive can't just command his own executive agencies, which to me is just a ridiculous legal question. And it's a non-legal question. It's a political policy question. So let's start there. I mean, where do we see all of this spending and the reduction of spending actually going?
No, and you're making great points, right? So many on the left just, and frankly, even some on the right, unfortunately, have kind of taken a position over the years that if a dollar has already gone out, you know, from the U.S. Treasury and been spent on XYZ in the past, it has to keep going out in the future. In fact, let's turn it into $1.05 or $1.10 or $1.25, you know, whatever it is. That perspective is basically gone. I mean, it's just the notion that just because a dollar was spent in the past, that it should be spent in the future, it's totally thrown out the window, and it's just great. And they're reviewing every single thing top to bottom in the federal government because there's so much duplication. They have programs that are existing in multiple different agencies instead of kind of condensing something into one. Or more often than not, there's programs that shouldn't even happen. There's entire departments that shouldn't happen, right? We always talk about Department of Education. It's just not something that's even mentioned in the United States Constitution. Education is something that should be done at the local level, at most at the state level. And even that's probably too far up the chain. It should be much more localized. And so we're seeing, even in Congress, believe it or not, even in Congress, we're seeing members of Congress saying, oh, okay, I guess we have to cut spending. the Doge and Elon Musk and Trump and Vance, they've really changed the culture around Washington and Washington political scene about spending cuts. It's now cool to talk about it. It's certainly acceptable, but again, more than that, it's cool to talk about it. It's now getting your political points from talking about spending cuts, and that's different from previous years. So I guess if your listeners want to think of it this way, one great effort that's already underway is this reconciliation project, which that's kind of a fancy Washington term for how do we get something through the Senate in an expedited fashion, meaning you only need 51 votes to pass, not 60. And then even then you may be saying, well, what's the difference, 51 and 60, not that big a difference. Well, don't forget, we have 53 Republicans in the Senate. So if you only need 51 votes to pass something, you could even lose two Republicans who take a walk and do something else, and you could still pass something. Frankly, the way the Senate works, you can even lose three Republicans. You have 50, and then the vice president could come in and break a tie, to pass legislation. So in other words, whenever anyone hears this word reconciliation, don't get scared by it. It's a big fancy Washington word. It literally just means get it through the Senate much faster. And so we're looking at spending cuts and tax relief going under that reconciliation project right now, or process right now, so that things like extending the Bush tax cuts, going further and doing further tax relief, significant spending cuts, elimination of departments, removing spending that's on autopilot, getting some of that out of the budget, all of that could be done in an expedited fashion through the Senate. So very, very exciting stuff coming, and it's a live fire exercise right now. It's great.
Yeah, it is. And I think we're finally seeing, as J.D. Vance put it, a government firing on all cylinders, at least within the Trump administration. But let's talk about that very important point that you mentioned, Paul Teller, that the Department of Ed, for example, is not a constitutional agency. In other words, it's not something that's required to exist. It is a creature of the executive branch. And that's something that I actually think is unconstitutional, because education is not a subject matter given to Congress to legislate on or the executive to enforce. We have specific limited subject matter for the federal government in Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. And then, of course, Articles 9 and 10 suggest that then all authority not given to the federal government is reserved to the states or to we the people. So some of the power actually resides in us. Not even the state or the federal level can override the will of the people and our own power of self-government. But when we look at some of these projects, like, for example, income tax, that unfortunately, through the creation of and the passage and ratification of the 16th Amendment, is now part of the Constitution. And so there's going to be a little bit of a difference in terms of the power between what the executive branch under President Trump can do unilaterally versus what would have to go through Congress. And where do you see those battle lines being drawn when we're seeing already a lot of these activist judges trying to thwart Trump and Elon Musk, frankly, at every turn?
Yeah, and you're making a great point that, like, those on the left make the assumption, just like we were saying before, that if a dollar has gone out of the Treasury, it has to keep going out. Same thing with a federal employee. They take the impression of, hey, if someone's employed by the federal government, they have a right to that job. They can't be fired. Everything they're doing is important. And, even if somehow they get fired, they have to be replaced, all that kind of stuff. No, that mentality is also gone. And just what you said, like, the Constitution specifically says the president is the chief executive, the sole executive. It doesn't then say, and by the way, he must be forced to hire bureaucrats who don't agree with him, or he must be required to retain bureaucrats that are openly hostile to his agenda. Like, of course, that's not in the Constitution. The left would never tolerate that, right? Imagine if, like, Kamala Harris had won, God forbid, and, you know, somehow found that there were, the Department of Health and Human Services were just packed with pro-lifers. You know, that, of course, wouldn't happen in the real world, but let's just say hypothetically that were to happen. She would never tolerate that. She would never say, oh, gee, gosh, all these federal workers are all pro-life. I guess I just have to keep them around. No way. They'd be tossed out the next morning. And, you know, finally we have Republicans with the gusto enough to realize, yes, we also have the right to toss out people who don't agree with the president's vision because the president is the only executive. He's the one that gets to control the executive branch. And if people aren't on board for the mission, you know, they get to see the door on the way out. So it's fantastic. But yeah, as you pointed out, the Constitution is super clear about what Congress can legislate on, what the executive can operate on. And if it's not listed there, it really isn't supposed to be done. Obviously, we're super way far past that, unfortunately, from the New Deal onward. But we're starting to see, turning the battleship, if you will. It's going to take a while. It's going to be slow. Might even be painful. But we finally have an administration and some in Congress that are on board, and certainly the conservative movement, for turning that battleship, righting the ship, and headed back in a direction of a more limited constitutional government. And it's just so exciting to see.
Yeah, and so one of those things that Advancing American Freedom has is on their website is a tax reform blueprint and then also a guide to cutting federal spending. Let's go into more detail on both of these plans and how this could actually be accomplished, because I think a lot of people are very excited for federal spending to be cut and, of course, tax relief. That's a huge thing. Anyone who pays federal income tax is just appalled at how much theft is actually going on, to put it lightly.
Oh, yeah.
So what can realistically happen long term and even just in the immediate sense for tax relief?
Yeah, well, that's something that's a big project for us at Advancing American Freedom. What I would say probably our top project right now is making sure those Trump-Pence tax cuts from 2017 get not only extended as is so that everyone can keep their same tax rates and everything you're working on right now, but let's even go further. Like, why should we stop there? Let's do additional tax relief and give more people more power over more of their own resources for both, again, individuals, organizations, businesses, the whole thing. And it's a live fire exercise. Right now, Congress is debating, you know, how do we extend the tax relief that exists? In other words, do we just keep it as is? Or are there things that we do want to tweak? Some members, unfortunately, are saying, there's certain extra deductions that we think we should have in the tax code, meaning let's not simplify and flatten our tax code. Let's get it a little more complex. That's unfortunate. We're hoping to push those folks back and just kind of extend as is the Trump tax cuts and then go further. Particularly, a lot of folks are saying, you know, let's make American business even more competitive on the world stage by reducing their taxes so that businesses pay a lower tax rate and it's easier to open a business here, maybe expand a factory, hire more people, be competitive with China, Europe, Japan, anyone else who, you know, is in emerging markets, that kind of thing. So that's happening right now, again, under that reconciliation process that we talked about before, so under expedited procedures to get it through the Senate. So you wouldn't need Democrats on board to pass tax relief, because I don't think any Democrat, unfortunately, wants the average American to keep more of his or her own money. They're actually saying, no, people should pay more into the federal treasury as if that's, you know, a desirable thing. But yeah, they seem to want it. So right now, we're just working with anyone who will work with us, and that's other conservative groups, that's tax groups, business groups, on the Hill, off the Hill, administration, you name it, just to say, let's extend and expand those Trump tax cuts. Let people keep more of their own money. Let them make more of their own choices with their own money. So it's an exciting time.
Absolutely. And being able to keep more of our own money is part of the puzzle, but also not having to spend so much because of all of the price increases under so much inflation that we've seen with the Biden administration and even, you know, even through Republicans as well. I mean, this is something that unfortunately has persisted even into previous Republican administrations. What can be done in the short term to turn around inflation when we're talking about the economy?
Yeah, absolutely. And for us, what I think many conservatives would agree is a big way to get a handle on inflation is to get tax relief extended, increased, and at the same time, cut federal spending. Because so much of the inflation is coming from just the federal government just absolutely exploding with dollars, you know, onto the market. And of course, that's just going to naturally lead to inflation. So we can, you know, rein the federal government spending back in. We could, you know, keep tax rates low, maybe even go further, keep them lower, you know, encourage economic growth, encourage the private sector to grow, all of that. We think that that gets inflation down, certainly in the short term, but I think it would also be a sustainable, you know, bring inflation to a sustainable level for the long term if we can get government spending under control. So it's all part of that process. And what's going to be tough, you know, and you know this, a lot of your listeners know this, Republicans just don't have a great muscle memory for cutting spending. Frankly, they have the opposite, where they just kind of say, well, gee, we can't cut, we'll just have to increase. You know, so I mean, it's kind of crazy. So it's working through the Doge, Elon Musk, and others to just convince them it's okay to cut spending, you're going to be fine, it's not going to hurt you. If anything, it actually is going to help you politically now, and it'll help the economy, help America. So we're working on that. One thing to point out, by the way, to your listeners, on the tax side is there's a little bit of trouble brewing in paradise because there are some folks. Here's the short of it. The way that Washington's weird rules work is that anything that's if there's a spending increase somewhere from last year, it's assumed that it's going to continue this year. So if that spending increase continues, no problem. It just kind of is, you know, it scores almost as a zero on the federal books if you just keep it the same. The same is not true for tax relief, meaning like the way the Washington rules work, they assume tax relief, you know, tax cuts are going away. So if we just want to keep the Trump tax rates exactly as they are, in other words, anyone listening right now, if your tax rate stays exactly the same, the way Washington scores that is a cost to the federal treasury because it was assumed to go away. So if you're keeping it, therefore it's a cost. It's totally insane. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And we're working against that so that it doesn't cause any problems from kind of a bookkeeping perspective. And it may discourage some folks from even supporting tax relief because it's like, well, wait a minute, it's a cost to the federal government. No, of course it's not. Letting people keep their exact same tax rates isn't a cost to the federal government, but some, you know, Washington weirdos think that it is. And we're working against that right now.
Yeah, and I think you were so right, Paul, to describe this as, you know, kind of a worldview or a viewpoint difference that we have to get Washington, at least those on the Republican conservative side, to start thinking about taxing and spending differently. I mean, I remember reading a book from Barry Goldwater, you know, back in the early 80s, talking about how Republicans were too overeager to just use the money from taxpayers because it's not coming out of their own pocket, just in all of these exorbitant ways. That's not fiscally conservative, and it doesn't actually mesh with our economic principles that conservatives have championed for so long. And so this kind of goes back to what your website on Advancing American Freedom and this American Agenda is talking about when we talk about American culture, because I think there is such a culture in Washington in a uniparty sense that all tax and spend is pretty much presumptively good and any sort of rollbacks are presumptively bad. And as a policy argument, I think we need to flip the script. And that's what I'm seeing Trump and Vance doing. How is the overall culture of Washington changing?
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, that's exactly what it is. That they're making it, and I think, you know, let's face it, it's probably an Elon Musk thing because he just has this magical ability that others don't have to make things cool. Like some of his tweets, right? He'll just like tweet a single emoji and it'll get like 17 million views. I mean, like it's just, you know, it's just amazing what he does. So he, through that pressure, has made it, at least for the time being, it seems to be cool to cut spending or at least talk about it. We'll see what happens when the rubber meets the road and we're going to push for it. A lot of folks are pushing for it. But at least for now, it's actually okay to talk about not even just cutting spending, but cutting big amounts of spending. Because, you know, many of your listeners who have followed politics for years might remember amendments on, you know, the House floor, the Senate floor that would cut 1% across the board, 0.5% across the board, 0.25% across the board, and these amendments would go down in flames. Even Republicans would defeat them. Just unbelievable. Now we're talking about, you know, cuts in the hundreds of billions of dollars, trillions of dollars over several years. So that's new. That is right there. That's a new thing in Washington. So that's a positive. We should build on that. We should positively reinforce folks who are talking that way, who want to cut spending, who are putting forward serious proposals. And, you know, needless to say, and I think Elon will be good at this too, and others, we do need to shame some members who are going against the tide, who are saying, no, we don't need to cut anything, or we only need to cut this marginal thing, or this little thing, or this tiny dollar amount. Those days are gone, right? I mean, that's when we had surpluses. Okay, sure, we can cut little bits, but we're now talking about $36 or so trillion in debt, $1 or more trillion of deficit each year. Just, you know, unsustainable and immoral, right? It's not something that we should be doing in a free society. So it's time to get serious. And, you know, Elon seems to be changing that culture. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm loving seeing Elon's speeches or just comments to the media from the Oval Office. I mean, just the picture there of, you know, Trump sitting behind it, the Resolute desk, kind of looking over at Elon, grinning as he just, you know, spouts all this stuff. And then the media, like, freaking out and panicking over it. I mean, this is exactly what I voted for. I'm like, I love this so much. And I think a lot of us are just loving the fact that the uniparty establishment, the media elites, I mean, everybody who were the gatekeepers and the controllers of all of the oppression, frankly, in Washington, are now on their heels, and they are panicking and scrambling. And this leads, I think, into your second bucket here of American opportunity, because when Trump and all of the White House offices have that banner flag on their X account saying, you know, America is back, that's how we really feel, like, on not only on the world stage, but also here domestically, we're finally saying, okay, maybe we will get some relief from all of this oppression and, you know, the, what did Biden call it? Like the dark winter of, you know, death and all this stuff. I mean, which was basically describing his own administration. But I think we are now seeing that we will experience some relief from that. So how does that build into kind of this second category of fostering American opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a return of common sense, right? It's just taking things that the average person on the street who doesn't even really follow politics, but just knows in his or her gut, taking that and putting it into politics, right? Because previously, you know, at least in my 3 decades of doing this in this game, it's been the opposite. It's like, let's take common sense and totally ignore that. You know, now it's like common sense actually is ruling the day. And obviously, there's more work to be done. You know, it's just the beginning. You know, many things that have even been done by executive order. There's now a lot of chatter around Washington, like, hey, we got to lock these things in statute. Like, got to pass laws so that, you know, the next president who comes in can't just kind of undo lots of good things by executive order, like Biden did. If you remember, when Biden and Harris came in January 2021, their first week, all they really did was just undo so many great Trump and plans and executive actions and other things. So that's kind of something we're working on, too, is how do we lock in some of these great things? That's why it's important for Congress to take action and pass laws, not just do, you know, executive actions from the president. Those are great. Those are great start. But, you know, let's lock those things in. But, yeah, American opportunity is really just when we just talk about letting, you know, having a government that does less, you know, so that the American people can do more. And, you know, as individuals, as organizations, as citizens groups, as businesses, they should be doing more with more of their own resources. Government should be doing less. It could facilitate things that, you know, that it is best suited to do, right? National defense, border security, other things that are enumerated in the Constitution. But other than that, leave those things, like you said, leave them to the states, leave them to the people, leave them to the private sector. It was, if you think about COVID, it was the opposite, right? The public sector was strengthened and, you know, government was strengthened. The private sector was in retreat, right? We were all literally hiding in our houses, shuttering our businesses and associations, churches, the whole thing. This is the exact reverse. It's now government's on the run, right? If we had a political cartoon, you would draw like an image of government like running while being chased by, you know, private businesses, private individuals, private investment, all that kind of stuff. And so that's what we talk about, is kind of just reorienting government to get out of the way of people and let the American people flourish. Because when that happens, they do flourish, and that's better for everybody. It lifts all people at all parts of the income scale.
Yeah. I think we need to bring back all of the Roadrunner memes and, you know, have like Doge as the Roadrunner with like the deep state and the bureaucracy as Wile E. Coyote just utterly failing in all their attempts to like slow down the Roadrunner. Like, those are some of my favorites.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. During the first admin. And I love that Trump is so memeable. I mean, I think that part of especially the younger generation's just obsession with him comes because he's so funny. And, you know, you know, Paul, knowing him personally, I mean, he is one of the funniest people that I've ever been around, had the privilege to just, you know, to sit back sometimes and listen to him just being so funny.
Yeah.
And that's part of the likability. But that's also part of, I think, why Elon is being so successful at generating such a groundswell of support, not only through transparency, but also because he is just making fun of all of these people that take themselves far too seriously. I mean,
totally.
You know, even back in the Bush era and stuff, when and I remember, I mean, I was an intern during George W. Bush's tenure. And I remember, you know, if you go into the West Wing, it was like, you know, women had to wear the pantyhose and the pearl. I mean, everything was so straight laced, you know, all this. And which is fine. You know, there's definitely I like the respect for the office. But part of this is that, you know, K Street, Washington, all of these places just take themselves so seriously. And Elon on social media is just blowing that up and just saying, you know, come on, guys, like, forget it. And he's making, you know, CNN and some of these anchors actually say phrases and comment on things that he's posting on socials that I'm just sitting there like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is actually happening. But in a sense,
exactly.
I think that's the comedic relief that we need a little bit. To take the fear of government away as well, because that's really what's gotten down and oppressed the American people so much, especially during COVID, was like this fear that you would lose your job, you would lose, you know, your standing in community, you may lose your health if you end up being forcibly compelled to take the COVID vaccine. I mean, all of this fear mongering in so many different ways. From the big bureaucracy. That's what I see Trump and Elon really trying to dispel and restoring that faith and trust in government that we really need. So, of course, the deep state is not just going away. So where do you see potentially the pitfalls for the administration in all of your policy experience that they should navigate strategically so they don't get as tied up in all of the red tape and maybe the lawsuits and litigation and all that, that frankly they really did in the first term?
Yeah, no, good point. And they're working on it now. Obviously, you're working with some good friends who are in various agencies, and they're in the midst as we speak. I mean, as you're listening to this, we've got great allies in different agencies who are just trying to get rid of bad apples, you know, of rotten eggs, whatever the analogy is, of just folks that, you know, have shown that they are hostile to Trump and Vance, that don't believe in the mission, that are, you know, they're just there to do kind of a DEI, you know, woke kind of thing. And if they can't do that, well, you know, they're not going to at all do what they're told. So they're trying to root these folks out and replace them with folks who are, you know, mission driven. But as you pointed out, it's not so simple. There are civil service laws that, you know, sometimes kick in. I would argue that, like, the Constitution, as we talked about before, says the president could, you know, have who he wants working for him. But there still will be moments where, you know, there could be lawsuits that say, hey, you fired me unjustly. You didn't give me the warning I'm entitled to. You know, you fired me for the wrong reason, right? Some will claim total fake reasons for being fired, right? Even though the reason may have been substantive, they may, you fired me because I'm a black woman or something. And obviously that's not going to be true, but they'll claim that and it'll tie them down in lawsuits. So hopefully, and it looks like they are just really dotting their I's, crossing their T's, and taking their time, right? Sometimes we conservatives could be frustrated. Why are they just wiping these people out, put conservatives in and be done with it? They're trying to do it methodically. They're trying to do it right. They're trying to do it, you know, as legally proper as is required for different positions that that they're working on replacing folks in. So it may take a little longer than we would like, but I assure you they are working on it. I was talking with one just last night about some efforts at DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and that's obviously a super important agency, ground zero for border security and other security, and you just want to get that right. You want to make sure you're keeping good people. You don't need to get rid of people who are actually mission-driven, but making sure that folks, you know, find their way out the door if it's, you know, they're not in line with the agency's vision, with the president's vision.
Yeah, so well said. And I think that's something that Trump definitely learned from the first term, to get people who are mission aligned. And if that's how he defines loyalty, then I am all for that, because as you and I both well know, anyone who works for the administration or works for him serves at the pleasure of the elected. It's not their office. They weren't the ones that were elected. I mean, they are part of the whole elected office, because, I mean, I voted for an administration as a whole, not just the one occupant, but he is the office holder, so he gets to determine the people around him. And they should be on board with that mission. So in just the last few minutes I have with you, Paul Teller, and I so appreciate this deep dive, let's talk about this last bucket of American leadership. In at least as articulated by Advancing American Freedom, focuses a lot on the world stage and foreign policy as well as domestic policy. We're seeing a lot of that in terms of Trump's leadership already when we're talking about, you know, Israel and Gaza and maybe Mar-a-Gaza, you know, some of those things that are mixed reactions. But you know, but we're just seeing that America is back, not only domestically and for America first and strengthening our borders, all of that, but also, as Joel Rosenberg actually described it on radio with me earlier this week, there's a new sheriff in town. And I think everyone and world leaders understand that, especially from what they learned in the first term of Trump.
And it feels so good, doesn't it? I mean, I just love seeing a strong America again and a president who's respected on the world stage. And, you know, you may say, well, what are you talking about? They think, you know, Trump says this and he says that. Okay, all you need to do is look at it. It's not a coincidence that, you know, just this week, right, there was an American hostage that came back from Russia. There are hostages being released from Gaza. There are other countries who at first maybe tried to flex their muscle a little bit, right? Examples like Canada, Mexico, Panama, China, others, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, just kidding. You know, like, and they back off real fast when they see that it is no longer kind of, you know, flaccid Joe Biden in the White House, but, you know, we've got strong Donald Trump in the White House, and things are going to be different. They're going to be as they were before. We're going to treat our friends as friends, our enemies as enemies. And also just that perspective that a strong America at home makes it easier to be a strong America abroad. And so, you know, when we, everything from the, you know, Donald Trump really sees the connection between domestic weakness, you know, through the DEI stuff, through transgendering kids, you know, through, you know, government control of education and all the things that are just the rot in our culture and eating away at our soul, that weakens us on the world stage too. And so he sees that connection and we see that connection, and we're trying to encourage that as much as possible. But yeah, like you said, America's back. And it's just exciting to see. And there's so much more to come on the international stage, where we just have peace through strength, as Reagan originally said, right? We don't want peace through kind of fear and running the other direction. We want to be strong, and people will be afraid to attack us and afraid to attack our allies, and therefore want to work with us, and we can have more peace. I mean, it's fantastic. We'll see it, I think, most clearly in the Middle East. I think you're going to see countries joining the Abraham Accords, you know, that landmark peace treaty between Israel and some of its Arab neighbors during the Trump years. I think you're going to see more countries joining that. You're going to see more countries kind of reaching out and saying, oh, I want a trade agreement, or I would, you know, would love a peace treaty with you, or let's do joint military exercises. It's just going to be an outbreak of peace, I think, across the Middle East, across the world, and we can all be thankful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so last question for you, Paul Teller, for Advancing American Freedom and organizations that are influencing policy. You know, here we have AFA Action. There are so many great conservative organizations that I think are all championing the same values, biblical principles, and issues for the Trump administration. I know there's been a letter that we signed on to with AAF as recently as this week, calling on OMB to hire pro-life conservatives and to make sure, you know, that we have those types of priorities. And so for Advancing American Freedom in particular, how can people help your organization, and what priorities, in addition, you know, to everything that we've talked about, are you working on that they should be aware of?
Absolutely. And we're blessed to be one of those generalists across the board, you know, full spectrum organizations. So basically, if there's an issue that's hot, we've got some position on it. We've got some project. We've got something we're doing with it. So check with us through, you know, advancingamericanfreedom.com is the website. On Twitter, it's, or X, I guess we're calling it, at American Freedom is our organizational handle. Personally, I'm at P Teller, P-T-E-L-L-E-R. Would love to engage with you that way. But also, just, you know, if you're an organization that's listening, whatever, you just want to partner up with, you know, like you said, coalition letters, filings on court cases, joint ads we could run together, anything like that. We're just always looking for partners, collaborators, you know, who want to advance this full spectrum traditional conservative agenda and just bring back, as the name says, bring back American freedom, advance it across the country and across the world. So just look forward to so much more.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and look forward to speaking with you on radio soon and doing another deep dive as we continue to get into more and more of these issues. I mean, it's only been 3 weeks. And so looking forward to, you know, the next 4 years. There'll be so much to talk about. Paul Teller. And as he mentioned, you can follow him on X at P Teller. And you can also go to advancingamericanfreedom.com to find out more about the great work that you all are doing in policy. So thanks so much. And for everyone listening, we do these deep dives weekly with guests and topics and issues that you are concerned with, that you want to hear about, and people you want to hear from. So you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net to ask a question, suggest a topic or a guest. We get a lot of response for that. And often the things that I choose to talk about are influenced by listeners to our AFR programs and what you want to hear about and what you want to discuss. So you can always submit your questions and concerns to Jenna at AFR.net. And I will see you here on demand next week. And as always, from 8 to 9 Eastern on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.